The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. When I was a kid, my family spent summers on a farm in Quebec's eastern townships, about 10 minutes from the Quebec-Vermont border. During those summers, we'd go to the nearest town, Stanstead, to visit the library and borrow some books, some movies. That town library is known as the Haskell Free Library and Opera House, and there is a line drawn down the center of its floor. The line marks the U.S.-Canada border because the Haskell is not just Stanstead's library, it's also Derby Lines, which is the small Vermont town directly across. Nobody has to officially cross the border to use the library. It exists in both countries. 30 years ago, that distinction and the line meant nothing. To a kid, it was fun to hop back and forth between the U.S. and Canada, but even to adults, parents and grandparents and families who lived in or near the two towns, the line didn't mean much. If you needed to visit the States, or you lived in Derby Line and you needed something in Canada, you would check in at the border, maybe, but not always. And even the check-in just meant a question about where you were going. No passports, no visas, no immigration status. That started changing after September 11th, of course, and then came the current U.S. administration.
President Trump is talking tough about the border. At Mar-a-Lago today, issuing an unprecedented threat to shut down the whole border if Mexico loses control of the migrants arriving there. The president also saying he has authorized troops on this side of the border to use deadly force.
We need the wall. We need, more important than anything, we need border security, of which the wall is just a piece.
Donald Trump is facing heavy criticism after calling for a, quote, total and complete ban on Muslims entering the United States.
Now the same line that meant nothing to me and everyone else as a kid means everything to families scattered across North America. Because the Haskell Free Library and Opera House still sits in both Canada and the United States. The border is still marked by that simple line. The difference now is that line is where parents and children, grandkids and grandparents, prohibited from officially crossing the border, can see each other, can touch each other, can talk face to face for a few hours. This is a story about how a 100-year-old little library came to host reunions that literally wouldn't be possible anywhere else. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Yagena Torbati is a Reuters immigration reporter. She went to the Haskell to take a look at what happens there, and we reached her in the Reuters newsroom in Washington, D.C. Yagena, how did you hear about the Haskell?
So I cover immigration issues, and I've been covering the travel ban since it really was enacted, since that very first weekend when there were lots of protests against the ban in various airports in the United States. And I followed the issues as it kind of wound its way through the court.
Is that this Supreme Court is upholding the president's travel ban.
And through various iterations over the past year and a half, now nearly 2 years. And so I was working on a separate story related to Iranian students who actually have an exemption to the travel ban, but nevertheless, that their visa numbers have gone way down this year. And so I was working on that story and therefore speaking to a lot of Iranian students, including ones who are already in the United States. And while speaking to some of them, one of them told me about this reunion that they had in this library. And after that person told me about it, I just really couldn't stop thinking about it and sort of went about finding more people who had been there and then decided to go there myself as well.
Tell me about the Estebanati family.
So Shirin Estebanati is a Iranian student in New York City and, getting her PhD. She had seen her mother a couple of years ago, but she hadn't seen her father for 3 years before they reunited at the library. And in that time, he had had a heart attack and she hadn't been able to leave because she's on a single entry visa. And, you know, her sister heard about this library, her sister who lives in Canada, and they planned this visit and they had this very emotional reunion. You know, she kind of describes how her father even smelled her and told her that he missed her smell. And, you know, for her, it was just this very touching but also bittersweet moment. She felt that her father had even shrunk a little bit from the last time that she had seen him. And it was just really a like very tangible example of the beauty of these reunions and the chance that this library affords these people, but then also kind of the limited nature of it. I mean, they had to say goodbye to each other after 2 days, you know, a few hours each day spent at the library. So it wasn't perfect for them, but I think they all found themselves very fortunate that they were still able to meet there. these different groups of Iranian families found out about this library. And one thing that is sort of important to understand about this story and about what's happening is that many Iranian students who come to the United States to study, usually they come for doctorate programs that are quite lengthy, but they are given many times only single entry visas, which means they can come in, they can start their program of study, they can stay as long as it takes, but they can't leave the country without having to apply for another visa. And
right.
That can be a very lengthy and unpredictable process. So for many of them, and I knew many of them when I was going to college as well, and I know many of them now, you know, they are just sort of confined to the United States for 6, 7, you know, maybe 8 years. Now, before President Trump instituted a travel ban on most citizens of Iran and a few other countries, those students' parents could come visit them, but that's no longer possible. And so those people who can afford international travel have been trying to find some solution to see each other. What's been happening is that those families that find out about the Haskell Library, usually the parents, the elderly parents, oftentimes aging, oftentimes with, you know, pretty serious health problems, they fly from Iran to Canada. They've obtained Canadian visas, which are somewhat easier to get. They fly to Canada. Usually, in the situations I found, they have like another family member, either another child or some other close family member in a major Canadian city, either Toronto or Montreal. They drive down to the library, which is on the U.S.-Canada border, and then their children or their other relatives in the United States in turn either fly or drive up to the library from the southern side in the United States, and they meet there. And the way the library is set up, although it's partly in Canada and partly in the U.S., its entrance is on American soil. And what basically happens is that people entering from Canada are allowed to walk a few steps onto American soil to enter the library without going through a port of entry. And because of this sort of special dispensation, these Iranians coming from the Canadian side, who otherwise would not be allowed in the United States because of the travel ban, are able to enter the library. Their children or other relatives are allowed to enter from America, and they've been having these very heartfelt, teary reunions inside the library itself.
Can you tell me some more about the reunions?
Right. So I saw two reunions happen myself, and it was pretty stunning. I mean, these are people who haven't seen their child for several years, and that can get very difficult. Usually the parents just sort of rush in, and that's what happened in one case that I saw, and immediately everyone burst into tears. There's a lot of hugging. There's just a lot of embracing of each other. And then they just sort of sit for hours and talk to each other. I try to give people as much space and privacy as I could while also identifying myself as a reporter and expressing interest in speaking to them after they were done, after the library closed, and they were very gracious in that. But mainly the reunions consist of these people just being in each other's presence, talking to each other, touching each other. You know, for a lot of the kids, they're seeing their elderly parents after 2 or 3 years. And, you know, when people are in their 60s, they can really age quite quickly. So they sort of, it's almost like they're trying to check up on them and make sure that they're okay. There's only so much you can really convey via, a phone chat or a video chat.
Up next.
There was very much that anxiety among people that, like, if anyone finds out about this, like, our lives could change and we won't be able to have this anymore.
There's a trader in all of us. Direct invest with Scotia iTrade. Become a new client and you could get up to $1,500 cash or 300 free trades when you open and fund a new account. Conditions apply. See ScotiaiTrade.com for details. Tell me what it's like inside the library. What does it look like?
It's very sort of warm and inviting. It's a very small library. There's a main kind of children's reading room that's very brightly decorated. There's a sort of more kind of work-like space that has some tables and chairs and computers for people to use. There's sort of a stacks area in the back of the library, and then there's like a main hallway. And that's basically it. You know, there's wood paneling. As an American, I was quite amused that there's a moose head on the wall. It's
right.
Very true to form. It sort of has this Victorian feel, but also very homey at the same time. And then, of course, sort of like pretty innocuous on the ground, there's like this piece of black I'm not sure if it's like electrical tape or actually just painted on, but it's this like thin black line that sort of cuts diagonally across the library, and that demarcates the international border. And so, you know, it's sort of almost like an afterthought. It's not really a formal marking. And that, I think, also kind of represents that to this library, like once you're in there, these borders kind of don't really matter that much and people can freely cross and they don't really have any issues with that.
How does this place even exist in 2018, given our sort of strong borders leaders and immigration law these days? It seems like a total relic of the past.
It really does feel that way. It felt to me like it was in this very tenuous situation, and that it was in a very fragile place. And I think that was obvious in the library's attitude towards the visits and in some of the interactions that I learned of as I was reporting this story, especially between U.S. immigration authorities and the Iranians. The sense I get is that it really depends on the agent and that there isn't like a set policy. One pair of sisters I spoke to and who are in the story came there this September and were actually blocked from going in. They were told that the reunions aren't allowed anymore. And then when a staff member invited them in for a tour, because at that time the Opera House was having tours, later that staff member was chastised by Border Patrol. You know, I heard a lot of stories that are also in the piece itself about Border Patrol agents trying to limit the visits to like 20 minutes to prevent them from happening in other ways, telling people they shouldn't be meeting there. I think when you're there, when the families actually arrive there, it's hard to say no to them because they're usually
imagine.
Like very sympathetic people, or you know, some elderly parents, some you know. Young students, even some children sometimes come, like the nieces and nephews of the students. And so there doesn't seem to be an easy universal policy. You know, we did hear from a library staff member that both U.S. and Canadian authorities had threatened to shut the library down over the visits. I should say that the Canadian authorities deny that, and the Americans declined to respond to our request for comment. But I had heard from, you know, people connected to the library, former board members, just people sort of in the community, that there was a lot of pressure that the library was facing over these visits. And it's not exactly clear to me why. The Canadians told me, I talked to RCMP, they say they have no problem with the visits. They say they're legal and they don't have any fear of illegal crossings because the area is very heavily surveilled. There's a lot of cameras around.
Yes.
So they have a pretty good sense of who's going in and who's coming out. And, you know, I put a lot of questions to the American authorities. They didn't answer. They sort of pointed me to a general law against illegal crossings. But, you know, there's no point in my story or any of the Iranians that I spoke to that indicates that they intended to illegally cross. They really just wanted to be at this library temporarily and then go back to where they came from. So I think that as long as the library itself remains open to people from Canada coming in without going through a port of entry, that it would be very difficult to completely bar the visits from happening. And there's still this sort of gray zone. And, you know, now we're into the winter. We don't, like, these visits are slowing down naturally anyway. And so it will be interesting to see if this continues when the weather gets nicer and it's sort of more the tourist season in Vermont and Quebec. But it's impossible to be there and not sense kind of overall this overriding tension and not see it in the context of the U.S. tightening its immigration laws and tightening its immigration policies in general, especially towards, obviously, people from Iran. That very much sort of permeates the atmosphere when you're there and when you kind of talk to people about this issue.
To me, this entire story is just like a picture of a moment in time that you'll never be able to recreate, because we're at like this nexus of changing immigration, and yet there's still these places that are like remnants of the relationship that we used to have.
Totally. I mean, you know, for me, this story was important because I think like when the history of this era is written, like, you know, you'll have the speeches, you'll have the policies, you'll have the executive orders, but how is the travel ban changing people's lives? Like, that to me is an important question. And also, it's something that's really faded from the headlines and people don't really talk about much anymore because there's just so much other stuff happening. But it was the first thing that Trump did as president. It was like a week after he took office that this happened. And it's important, and it's like reverberated in thousands and thousands of people's lives. And I just really wanted to sort of tell that story. And I don't think there's really anyone even in the story who even directly criticizes the Trump administration or has any sort of like partisan words or anything like that. But I do think you sort of get a very tangible sense of the lengths that people will go to see each other and sort of what obstacles have now been put in their way.
I remember walking around that library and picking out kids' books to read or VHS movies mm-hmm. to rent or whatever, and not giving a thought to anything about the U.S.-Canada border other than it's neat that there's a line on the floor, you know? And as a kid, you would jump from back and forth, and I'm in America, I'm in Canada. And there was no thought back then yeah. of this being a heavily regulated border.
Yeah. I really think, you know, and that's something that I kind of had some inkling of when I reported the story and even when I published it, but hadn't thought a lot about. There's this historian on Twitter, this guy Jacob Remus, and he was saying, you know, how these sort of spaces, these kind of spaces that you can't really categorize that easily, how they mean different things to different people when the U.S. sort of starts to close down its very contested tradition of openness. And the Canadians, I don't really know enough about it, but my sense is that the border is not as big of an issue to them as it is to the United States, especially after 9/11. I think that was a real turning point. From when I talked to people, it seemed like that was when you could go from just, you know, from what you experienced in your childhood to just sort of crossing and kind of saying hi to the border agent, but not really having to go through a formal process, to what it is now, which is like every single person has to show their passport and has to subject themselves to questioning and, you know, possible searches or whatever it might be. And these like little areas are very rare and maybe fading. I mean, one criticism I got a lot of both during the story and when it came out was, well, now that, you know, you're publishing this, it's going to end. And, you know, there's not much I can say to that. I can't predict the future, and it's really not my position to sort of try to ensure that something continues or doesn't continue. But there was very much that anxiety among people that, like, if anyone finds out about this, like, our lives could change, and we won't be able to have this anymore. So it all just kind of felt very precarious and very sort of fragile.
Well, there's the scientific maxim of you can't observe something like that without changing it.
Totally.
Thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yegana Torbati, immigration reporter for Reuters. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And you can visit thebigstorypodcast.ca for more from us. You can visit frequencypodcastnetwork.com for more from our brother and sister shows. If you're looking for something to listen to over the holidays, give them a shot. And of course, we're on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And we are, as always, everywhere you get your podcasts. And please give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know what you think. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you after the holidays. Have a happy one.